Welcome to OzFox Rocks, an Australian-based Microsoft Visual Fox Pro podcast. We're recording on Wednesday, September 14, 2005. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us on OzFox Rocks. My name is Craig Bailey, and opposite me is Scott Scovell. We're your hosts for the show. Welcome along, Scott.
Pleasure.
Well, we've got a great show for you tonight with tips, opinions, a great interview coming up later. However, the main reason, let's get down to it, for podcasting this to you is to build the Fox community here in Australia. To that end, we'll be discussing some of the great Fox work happening around the country and chatting with some of the Oz Foxies, you know, in upcoming shows.
Yes, that's one of the key aims for the Australian Fox Pro developers, to have a voice in the international Fox community, as well as keeping the local developers up to speed on what's going on in Fox.
Yeah, and it's a good chance, I guess, for our Fox friends overseas to learn about what's happening down under.
Absolutely.
Now, Scott, you're just back from TechEd 2005, and you're keen, I know, to chat about some of the really cool stuff Microsoft's working on.
Yeah, and in particular this show, I'd like to talk about Visual Studio Team System. I see it having a huge potential for all software development houses, especially the Fox Pro shops.
Very interesting, yeah. All that coming up soon. In fact, let me tell you what we've got this show. We'll be introducing a whole bunch of new segments, of course, including our OzFox Rocker of the Month, Site of the Month, Tip of the Month, Our Opinions Spot, and of course a great interview. And this show, we're really excited to have Andrew Coates in for a chat about his role at Microsoft and his opinions on the Fox in Australia. But first, it's time for the OzFox Rocks Tip of the Month. Okay, the OzFox Rocks Tip of the Month. Scott, talk us through what the aim of this segment is.
Yeah, in this segment, we're going to start the show with a quick VFP9 tip.
VFP9, you say? So are we limiting the tips to VFP9?
Basically, yeah.
All right.
Of course, they can be a generalised tip, but what we're looking for is things that we do better in 9.
Yeah.
So we're not going to limit ourselves to something specifically for 8 or versions below that. Yep. So if you can do it better in 9, this is what we're going to tip it.
Yeah, fair enough. Alrighty, so well, what's this month's tip?
This month's tip, a new VFP9 function called getAutoIncValue.
Mm.
This returns the last value generated for an AutoInc field within the data session. Okay, so in VFP 8, we got AutoInc fields. Really cool.
Yep, very cool.
But when we're using local views, we found we couldn't re-query the view after we've inserted a new record. We couldn't get the value of that AutoInc field back. So one solution I think I put in was where I had a trigger on the base table which set some private variable, and then I used the private variable to re-query my view, and away I went. Really ugly and...
Yeah.
So in VFP9, we've got this function, getAutoIncValue. The function returns us the last value generated for the AutoInc field. So this is scoped to the data session, or even using extra parameters to the function or method call that you inserted that record from.
Yeah.
So, or getAutoIncValue, new function in 9, very cool.
Very cool. Alrighty, thanks for the tip. Okay, it's opinion piece time. This is where Scott and I just wax lyrical about our thoughts on a particular item. And what we'd like to chat about this week is the Sedna roadmap. And Scott, you've read the interview with Ken Levy and Alan Griver by David Stevenson. Well, what was your take?
Well, I was unimpressed when I first heard the news about Sedna. But hey, you know, I'm starting to get the gist of it all now.
Yeah.
And look, you got to forget about all the rant about, what, is this a Service Pack 2, is this VP10, what's after it? I think that's all clouding the good stuff that's going to be coming out with Sedna. And as you know, Craig, I'm into architecture, so hearing about the focus on interoperability and extensibility and that sort of stuff really does it for me. We're interop with Visual Studio 2005, SQL Server 2005, Windows Vista.
Yeah.
Let's face it, Vista's carded for release next year, so it just makes sense to be planning support for Vista now. getting a few beaters out, getting feedback from the Fox community. Mm. You know, and I like the idea of regular beaters back to the community.
Yeah.
You know, after all, 2007, when Settlers, you know, started to come out, it's a long way off.
Mm.
Extensibility, love it too. Mm. You know, you give me the foundation and the building blocks, if you like, and let me loose on it.
Yeah.
I mean, what the community as a whole can achieve working with the extensibility architecture in 1 or 2 years would, you know, take the Fox team a decade.
Right. Yeah.
This kind of stuff takes us back to the community collaboration concept again, some of the stuff that we're promoting in the podcast.
Yeah, and actually we'll be talking a bit more on that later when we come to Craig Boyd's call to action. A great point. One thing I wanted to add just about the interview with David Stevenson, I think what impresses me about these guys so much is they're really honest. You know, I really trust Ken Levy now. He doesn't hype it up. He doesn't, you know, talk about how 3 versions down the track it's going to have this and all. It's, you get a sense that, yeah, what they say will happen. And so you find him saying, there's a great quote by Alan Grover when he talks about, look, we've got the budget. This is what we're going to do. So I feel secure in that as well. Yeah, it's not like, oh, it's based on copies here or the hype we have to generate and all that. It's going to happen. They've got a roadmap. They've got a specific architectural kind of framework that they're going to try and adhere to. That's what they're going to work on. Community beaters are going to come into play, and feedback based on that just going to make it a much better product. So, yeah. Great, so your overall summary, you give it the thumbs up?
Thumbs up from me.
Fantastic. Okay, so we mentioned earlier about team systems. So, Scott, did you want to pick up that thought?
Yeah. Look, like we said before, I was fortunate enough to go to TechEd 2005 on the Gold Coast this year.
Mm.
And one of the technology I was really excited
just
about.
Let me stop you there. Now, the Gold Coast, how's it compared to Sydney? You know, I know Australia's the place to live, but Sydney, Gold Coast?
Well, I'm not a city fan.
Right.
The Gold Coast is fine, but it's the Gold Coast. It's,
yeah,
it's tourism. It's,
yeah,
it's the Miami of Australia.
Right.
So, yeah, there's just apartments everywhere. There's no real, you know, you don't look like you're living there.
Right.
You're always visiting.
Yeah.
So, great place to visit.
Yeah. Actually, I like that. You're always visiting the Gold Coast. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry I distracted you there. Carry on.
No, that's great.
Yep.
Had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So, very excited before I left for TechEd about Visual Studio Team System.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a number of sessions at TechEd this year on Visual.
All right, sorry to interrupt again, but just before I'll just jump in. Now, Team System, are we talking about .NET here and nothing for the VFP user to take away?
No, not at all.
No, okay.
Admittedly, Team System is designed with the .NET programmer in mind, but definitely it's a tool for any software developer.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's clear a few things up right from the start. Visual Studio Team System is all about the development team.
Mm.
It's about developers, testers, architects, project managers, you know, even the boss there.
Mm.
Most of the press has been around the architecture and the developer tools. In particular, the sexy new designers and the rewritten source control, automated builds, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
What was it that Joel said recently in .NET Rocks? It was, you know, the low-lying
low
fruit.
Frying. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Frying. Sorry, mate. The low-flying fruit.
Depends how you like your fruit. But what was getting me really excited about Visual Studio Team System was the process guidance and the policy enforcement functionality that
mm-hmm.
was shipping with the Team Foundation Server.
Yep.
You know, good processes and team communication make great software. It's not the language you use. It's not the technology that you're running on. It's communication and processes.
Yeah.
So, if that was not enough, everything in Visual Studio is extensible.
Yeah.
And you know how I love this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's enough web service endpoints to start an endpointery.
Nice.
You know, this is where the VFP community jumped straight in. You know, we write the add-ins to leverage the awesome functionality of Team System, and then we start calling them from Fox. We hook it into our development tools.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Just sorry, but we hear this term best practice bandied about a fair bit, and particularly in regard to Team System. Now, you mentioned before good processes and team communication make great software, and I think that's really the point for me, as of course, you know, being a software manager managing a team, that's really about it. The good processes really are the difference. And so then good practice and best practice, where do you see best practice fitting into that? I mean, is best practice about the processes, or is it actually about the code you write?
Well, this is the definition.
Mm.
Our processes are put in place, mm-hmm. and we enforce them so we can guarantee good practice.
Right.
Not best practice. Best practice is an ideal world.
Yep.
And it may not even be meaningful to your operation.
Okay.
Someone who goes out there and gets a really good process for their system and it's working well and efficiently and they're knocking out great software, might impose on you and say, here's my practice, it's the best practice. But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to your operation,
right,
business. So you take those practices that other people are implementing or that's coming out of the theory, and you develop your good practice.
Mm.
And that's where Team System and the process guidance comes into place.
Right.
They're guiding you on your good practice to knock out great quality software.
Okay, fantastic. So summarizing then, you're saying Team System, it's a tool for enabling good processes and good communication, the end result of which, as you utilize it, is to get good software at the end. Therefore, it's great for VFP programmers as well as, well, any software programmer, and of course .NET, where its main market is. And I guess, what are you giving it? The thumbs up?
Oh, it's the big thumbs up. It's early days yet. It still hasn't been released.
Mm.
But from what I've seen, the community technology preview I've got, the beta 2, is very cool. Disregard all what we talked about, the low-lying fruit from before, but you know, that's, you know, a whole new source safe system, basically.
Yes.
Source safe rewritten. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. That's something we can use in Fox.
Yes.
We've got automated builds and that sort of stuff is normally in the realm of the .NET developer, but like I said, this stuff's all extensible.
Mm.
So we can be writing in the hooks and the add-ins, the events to apply that to our Fox development. So we can have automated builds in Fox. Just because we're not in .NET doesn't give us this stuff.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So that's right. We've got, at the higher level, the process guidance and the policy enforcements to make the team work really well. But there's also those developer tools in there that's going to make developing Fox applications stronger, much better quality.
And now it's time for our Link of the Month. Each show, what we like to point Foxies to is a web page or site that we've found particularly helpful. And this show, we're pointing you to the Win32 API site. This is the using Win32 functions in VFP. We've got the link to it in the show notes.
I love this site. This site's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Totally agree. I'm amazed at the work that Anatoly's put into this. It's awesome stuff. Now, look, the great thing about it is there's just a whole bunch of free stuff straight for any developer to use, but then for $80 a year you can subscribe to all these extra examples, content, everything there.
Yeah, and $80, if it only helps you once for one particular solution, $80 is money well spent. But $80 for the whole year, and this is a site that you're going to be going back to and over and over and over again. The information's just right there, very easy to find. You're not searching and running off through different links. It's in your face, good examples.
It's well laid out. It's a very easy to navigate site, so, and full marks to that for that as well. Now, have you ever had any trouble with your site, chap?
Well, the one issue that I've had with this site, and it was because of my own silly fault, but basically, I was using this site so much, I naturally went to bookmark it. I was using IE. And IE tempted me, and there was a little checkbox there saying, do you want to make this site available offline?
Yeah.
I said, you betcha. So I ticked the box, it bookmarked it, it then started the synchronization. So it started grabbing content off the site and put it in my local cache. But what they've got up on this site is obviously some sort of anti-denial of service. Right. So what I found very quickly was I got barred from the site after a minute or two, because obviously IE was just hitting it, pulling all the content down. That normally I wouldn't be too concerned, but I was actually using your account, chap. So you would have been blocked out that whole weekend because it didn't come online for a couple of days.
Right, right.
But word of warning there.
Yeah.
And the reason why I was doing that is because I use this site so much. And you will be too if it... In VFP 9, one of the cool features is binding to Windows messages.
Yes.
Okay. And for those who haven't actually used this this feature of 9 before, you're doing a lot of stuff in the Win32 API. So you're binding to Windows message notifications, and they're all coming through in all sorts of Win32 structs and that sort of stuff. And immediately to use this, you're going off and you're trying to grab this information. You can get a lot of it from MSDN. That'll basically get you started. It's a little awkward to actually find the information you want. You go straight up to this website and you're in there. You've got code examples. You've got the how to declare the Win32 API function in Fox, how to parse the structures out, and know where you're looking for the values.
Yeah, and the examples are actually useful examples. They're not those irrelevant ones that you would never use. They're actually real-world examples.
Yeah, they're cut-and-paste examples.
Mm.
You know, I've cut out those examples, pasted them straight into my code, and away I go.
Yeah, it's a great site, and for people that haven't actually been to it or aren't using Win32 functions in their code, then you're missing out on a big advantage. So go to the site, check out what you can do, and it'll be like a whole new world opened up to you. So that's the Using Win32 Functions in VFP site. That's this month's Link of the Month.
One of the great things about the developer community in any space is the willingness of people to share and help others. VFP, of course, is no exception, and this is probably an example of one of the earliest and most giving communities. I guess blogs lately have been a great source of help to many. So what we'd like to do in each show is recommend a great VFP blog.
Yeah, we like to call this segment our AusFox Rocker of the Month. And for our first show, we just couldn't go past the amazing Craig Boyd.
Everybody should check out his blog at Sweet Potato Software. This guy's put in a heap of effort.
Yeah, I mean, this guy astounds me. It's blokes like Craig Boyd and, of course, Rick Strahl, my personal hero, that, they tend to make me depressed.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've actually called for a swab with Craig Boyd. I want to know what he's taking.
Right.
I want the blood work done. I mean, he's just cranking through so much.
I mean, where do these guys get the time to do all this stuff? And, I mean, still earn money to pay the bills.
I know. Reading some of Rick's blogs, you'd think, look, it would have taken me the whole day to write up that stuff. And he seems to add as in if it was just a little anecdote. You know, at the end of a hard day.
Yeah. And lately, Craig Boyd, he's been churning out the posts on encryption, plus articles on GDI+, and earlier some work on scrollbar classes, spelling checkers, and others.
Yeah, and he's considering writing a book, you know, and he's Southwest Fox is on in a couple of weeks. He's presenting there, so he's preparing for that. He's putting out training videos.
Amazing. Well, there you go. Craig Boyd, he's this month's AusFox Rocker of the Month. Congratulations, Craig. The And while we're talking about Craig Boyd having scored our AusFox Rocker of the Month award, one of the things he mentioned in the post was his call to action or call to arms to the VFP community. And firstly, what do you think this is important for Australian developers, Scott?
I think it is important. I think this goes to some of the reasons we started the AusFox Rocks podcast. He's saying, let's stop defending FoxPro. Let's get out of this rut of justifying why we're FoxPro developers.
That's right.
Let's be positive.
Mm.
Get out there, show some great code that you've written. It doesn't have to be a full-blown enterprise app. It could be just a little snippet about how you solved a particular problem. But collaborate. Get it out in the community.
Mm.
Start promoting in a positive way what you're doing with Fox.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good point, and I've even mentioned this kind of stuff previously and on my blog as well. I like what you say about that. Let's not defend it. What do we have to defend here? Let's show what we can do. Or how do you think Australian developers could be answering the call to arms?
Look, your first step is user groups.
Mm-hmm.
Get out to your local user group, join in, participate. There's half a dozen very good reasons why you should be there.
Yes.
In fact, up at TechEd, I was there with a little, what they called a cabana session. So it wasn't a formal session in an auditorium. And Andrew Coates ran a little session on user groups, how to join, why should you join.
Yeah.
And as an aside, most people there were already members of a user group, so he was preaching to the converted.
Yes.
But it was good. I mean, you're going to user groups to network, to mix with people who are using Fox to collaborate, to share great code snippets.
Mm.
One of the interesting points, and it was universally agreed to, is we're there to boast, if you like. You're there to show off some of your code.
Right. Okay, yeah.
There's not a developer out there who at one point in time is proud of their code.
Yeah.
Look what I've just done, you know.
That's right.
And so get out to the local user group. If you don't know where one is, then contact Craig. Actually, you run the
Sydney
group.
Yep, you can contact me. The Sydney group, there's a very strong Melbourne group as well. And we're looking at possibly having one in Perth as well. So I guess here, talking just to Australian developers, there's definitely Australian Visual Fox Pro user groups. Of course, look on Universal Thread. There's always user groups from across America, and they're always being promoted. So they are strong, great sense of community. And yet, actually, there is something. I guess one of the problems when you're going to user groups is like, well, you know, I can get it all online, or I'll read a book or something. So, but one of the things I really love about the user group is that networking that you mentioned. You get along and you've got a problem, or it doesn't actually have to be a problem. The number of user groups I've been to, and there's some idea where you sort of think, hey, that's really cool, I could use that later. And if I wasn't at the user group, I wouldn't go looking for it.
That's exactly right. The gems that you get out of those type of meetings and the user groups are the stuff you're not looking for.
Mm.
You've already sat down and you've got a whole class that writes your exception handling. You go to a user group and then someone's got this great little code or class that is writing to the Windows event log or something like that. You think, man, I wanted to do that, but you know, it was going to take heaps of code, but bang, I've got it. I wasn't out there looking for rewriting my exception handler, but here's some great ideas and here's a new way to approach it, or I didn't know how to do it before.
Mm.
Yeah, you pick this stuff up from user groups when you're not necessarily out there looking for something.
Mm.
So user groups are a great vehicle to show off some of your code that you're doing, talking to other developers. It's a good vehicle to adhere to Craig's call to arms. Yeah.
So there you go. User groups, that's our big push. And I guess finally, just the if you do go and support the user groups, you are supporting the user groups. I know that sounds logical, but if you don't support them, then they don't really appear on Microsoft's radar or other people's radar. So just by going along, you gain from it, of course, but even you go along just to give and support the group, that is a good call to action response in itself.
That's right.
We were so excited to get Andrew Coates as our first interview on AusFox Rocks. Andrew is a long-time Fox man. He's used the product since its early Foxpro for DOS days. He ran his own company for many years, writing a range of Fox-based systems that concentrated primarily on visual data presentation. He's currently a developer evangelist at Microsoft, and he joins us today in person in the AusFox Rocks studio.
Andrew Coates, welcome along.
Thanks, Craig. Scott, great to be here.
Good to have you along.
Now, we're very excited to have you actually on our first show, Andrew, because you've got a long association with FoxPro, and you've been a published author from Australia, keeping up the Australian FoxPro content in the world. Tell us a little bit about your history with FoxPro.
Well, I was doing a civil engineering degree back in the mid and late 80s. In fact, probably in the early 80s as well, it was that sort of degree. Mm-hmm. And I kind of fell into programming. I took a job while I was on holidays, basically, and just get some money while I was at uni.
Right.
And ended up working for a big Australian insurance company after I graduated, mm-hmm. doing Fox stuff. Mm. Kind of stayed in it ever since. Decided I wanted to go back and be a real civil engineer. Went back to uni and did a master's degree in civil engineering, which ended up using a fair bit of FoxPro.
Right.
So I kind of stayed with it ever since, and spent a lot of time on the CompuServe forums and in the early days, and learned a lot from people like Lisa Slater Nichols and, yes. and a bunch of the other people who have been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And went to Michael Richter's Fox conferences in the mid 90s,
mm-hmm.
and was decided in the end that after I'd been to Willfest in 2002 that really we needed a Fox conference in Australia, so I decided to do that and started AusFox in 2003.
Yes,
and away we went from there.
Yeah,
and we finally ended up here at Microsoft.
Yeah, and you're a developer evangelist, of course. Most people would know that, but briefly tell us, what is a DE at Microsoft?
It's basically the ultimate geek job. They give me toys. They say, play with these toys. Get people excited with these toys.
Right.
Here are some more toys. And by the way, here's a paycheck.
Right.
That's pretty much the sum total of it. And basically, my job is to make sure that developers are up to speed with the latest tools and the latest going on that Microsoft are offering. It really is a matter of just trying to keep at least in front of the wave, and perhaps even one step in front of that, to make sure I know what's going on, and to make sure that I develop relationships with the developer community around the country. And what more could you ask for as someone, a passionate developer who loves the community? What else could you rather do? Fantastic.
So what, in your opinion, Andrew, has been some of the biggest features that FoxPro has offered developers over the years?
Well, it's always been a huge boon to have the data in the language. Mm-hmm. You know, that's always been the big thing about Fox. But the fact that you can bind directly to a data source from a control without all the rigmarole that you used to have to go through in .NET, for example, or through Windows 32, Visual Basic, for example, makes a huge difference to how quickly you can develop an application. All of the row-based functionality, you know, skip and go and all those sorts of things inside a cursor, enormously useful. And the fact that it connects so beautifully to SQL Server, I think they're the main things. Fox is a data engine with a great RAD environment around it, but I think primarily it's the data.
Mm. I think so. That's what really distinguishes Fox, is that ability to manipulate and access the data. And it's almost unique as the product there. And I think it's one of the least known features of Fox. When people say, you're using Fox, yeah, that was that extra tool in Visual Studio at some time.
Mm, I agree.
I think it's something that will be a topic that we're promoting more, and get people who are not familiar with Fox at all to understand what Fox is about.
Absolutely. I think it's a really worthwhile aim.
Mm.
And every time I show it to someone, I showed it to one of the .NET user group young tykes, and there's a couple of young tykes that present at the .NET user group here in Sydney every month, and I showed it to him and he was blown away. He just didn't understand how it could be so easy to do these things.
Yeah.
He thought there must have been some magic going on in the back end, and I told him there was. It was called FoxPro.
Yeah, that's right. Bring on the magic. I think one of the things that's it's been interesting, it's been in news groups, of course, it's often unfortunately used sort of to divide Fox and .NET, but this idea that some of the data tools are being slated for use in you know, enhancing .NET down the track and things like that. It's going to be enormously exciting.
Well, it's fantastic. I think
the data engine much more accessible.
Absolutely, and one of my really key takeaways from PDC was how cool that data manipulation stuff is going to be in version.next of the framework. But it still is version.next. We're still talking, you know, some months or even years down the track before comes out in the mainstream, and we've got it now in Fox. We haven't got all of the stuff they're looking at in Link in Fox, but lots of it's there.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting.
Yeah, exactly. And so given that FoxPro is strong in the data areas, and that's something that's possibly going to be in future versions of other tools, where do you see the FoxPro developer in 5 years' time when possibly those data tools are in other products? How do you see FoxPro developing and the FoxPro developer community in general?
I think any developer who understands data is well in front. And so the Fox developer is someone who understands data. It's an inherent part of the system. Yeah. So regardless of what the tool is they end up using in 5 years' time, and who knows what that's going to be, if they grok the data side of things, they're way in front.
Yeah.
And so, you know, understanding the stuff in Fox, understanding cursors, understanding SQL, understanding all of the interrelationship between local data sets and remote data sets, all of those sorts of things are something that you're going to be able to use anywhere. Mm. So I think it's would be bold, in fact, even perhaps presumptuous, to say where Fox developers are going to be in 5 years' time.
Right, yeah.
But I really do think that they've got a really good advantage from the data side of things. The other great advantage that Fox developers have is if you're using Fox properly, you get object orientation. You understand it. Mm. You've been doing it since version 3, you know, since 1990, whatever it was. Whereas if you've been a VB developer, you haven't got that quite so early. Mm-hmm. And while there are lots of great VB developers, VB.NET developers now who do get that, I think we're seeing a very similar pattern to what we saw at the time when Fox went from 2.6 to 3.0. There was a bunch of people who didn't make the leap, and the VB6 guys are being in that same sort of boat, which is a great shame, because there's some really powerful things that are happening in both VB on that, and the same thing that happened in Fox. Mm-hmm. The other, I guess, thing on that topic is that we understand about, for example, subclassing with your base classes immediately because then changes are easy to make. Mm-hmm. Lots of people in the .NET world are still coming to terms with that kind of thing. And so Fox developers have kind of had a head start in a lot of this stuff.
Right.
It's a very cool thing.
Yeah, so you're basically saying we've got a great foundation, got a head start, build on it, but in a couple of years, who knows?
I think who knows is exactly the right thing. And we know that the tool's still going to be around. Version 9 of the tool's supported for 10 years from release.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there are plenty of version 2 apps that are still running. I come across them in all sorts of places, you know, point of sale and all kinds of places where people, accounting apps. People are still running Fox 2.0 apps at the moment.
Right.
They run. They just keep running. It's a great system. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine there won't be Fox tools around, Fox applications around in that sort of length of time. Whether it's still being developed and supported after that, who knows? Mm-hmm. I think who knows is fair, but we definitely know it's being supported for 10 years.
Yeah,
I think that's an important point too. We're talking about foundation. We've got Fox developers with the skills in class inheritance and the data engine side of it. But we've got to look at what's coming out in Setna as well. We're going to be running, developing FoxPro applications parallel to what's going on in the .NET world and the SQL Server world. Mm. Whereas you look at the VB6 developer, and he's basically terminating. But we're there. We're going to be interoping with our .NET developers, whether they be web developers, ASP.NET, or our WinForms developers, their SQL 2005. So we've not only got the good foundation to make a move or develop as well in .NET, but we're going to be in a good position where we can developing alongside our .NET developers and our .NET team as well with our interoperability features.
I think it's an important point. Using the right tools for the job is a big thing. I know we talked early this year and late last year about using MapPoint Web Services, for example, with Fox, and we kind of came up with the idea that really the way to do it was to wrap a .NET class with a COM wrapper and call that from Fox, because that was the easiest way to do it. So that was an example of using the right tool for the job.
Mm.
Going the other way, I've seen plenty of opportunities where writing a middle tier using a Fox using Fox was the best way to access it from .NET, because the functionality was easy to do. All the data that you could drive the entire middle tier from a local database if you needed to. It worked really well. So again, the right tool for the job was the key there. I just want to go back one step. I don't want to say that VB6 developers are bad in any way, and there are plenty of VB6 developers who are going to live out their entire rest of their development life doing development and maintenance on VB6 apps.
Yeah.
And just like there were with 2.6 developers. Mm. Yeah, there were plenty of things to do. They didn't have to make that leap. And it tended to be that the people who didn't want to make the leap managed to stay and do the things with their tool. So again, none of these tools are getting worse because they're getting older necessarily.
No, that's right.
But there are, as we know, better tools coming out, or at least perhaps more capable tools for some of these things.
Mm. And also I think the point I was trying to make there was that we're going to be getting new features, we as in FoxPro developers. So yeah, we're going to be developing alongside these other great tools, and you're right, we're picking and choosing. We've got a wider skill base now.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Okay, Andrew, we've touched a little bit on .NET. Are VFB developers and .NET developers in opposite ends of the ring?
No. I think that any sensible developer will have a number of tools they can use for whatever job they're going to do. We've already talked a bit about this, but I think that if you look at the tools that are available in each of the different tool sets, they're very complementary. Sometimes they cross over. Sometimes they have different capabilities, but that's the beauty of being a developer. You don't have to be stuck in one particular tool. You can just use what's good and conversely not use what's not.
Now, we wanted to ask you about SQL Server, and in particular, the recent survey by Ken earlier showed that 54% of FoxPro programmers use SQL Server in their toolkit. So that would seem to us to be fairly indicative that it's useful. What are your thoughts? What are your take?
Well, I know I've been using SQL with VFP for a number of years, and it just seems to be a great fit.
Yeah,
it gives your client the reliability of the back end.
Okay,
and especially if they're already running SQL somewhere, it's almost a no-brainer because they just include their database backup or their maintenance plans with all the others, and they don't have to worry about that. They've got restore points and all those sorts of things that they need to have. The other great thing is that I've also used it extensively with MSDE, which of course is SQL Server, but it's the data engine version, and it works beautifully with replication, which is something Fox doesn't do natively. So again, it's the right tool for the job.
Yes,
I think it's a really important point. So the ability to put a SQL database on someone's laptop, to have them go away and have it available offline, and then bring it back and automatically have it replicate back to the main server, fantastic stuff.
And what about developing those client-server applications in Fox? Are you more of in the camp of putting a lot of the data and business rules in a Fox middle tier or a Fox layer, or put them back at the server and store procedures and have them in there?
I've certainly approached it from both directions. I think it's probably, again, one of those things that you look at the time and say, well, this seems to work best. If perhaps you've got a DBA who's particularly good at developing stored procedures, then you leverage that. If you've only got someone, perhaps you're working at a small shop where there's no one to do that database stuff, maybe you're more comfortable developing those things yourself in the Fox layer. And again, I think it's what you're comfortable with, what your tools are good at, and whatever you can use to get the best result for your customer and for yourself.
Yeah, great comment. We've heard you say a number of times and totally agree. It's getting the right tool for the job. So that should dispel any this versus that or I don't like that approach kind of thing, because there is no one set rule for everything. It's, assess the situation.
I think that's
best
even,
tool for the job.
That's true even in Fox itself. I think that Fox, probably amongst most of the development tools I've used, Fox is probably the one that has the most ways of doing any one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily the right way or the wrong way. It's just perhaps the way you're comfortable, the way that fits in with your programming style, that works best for you that way. And one of the reasons I love going to conferences is I see other ways of doing something I've been doing for a long time. All of a sudden it appears, and the people like Dave Bauer are a great example of that. He's come up with a fantastically innovative solution to a particular problem and that I've agonized over and produced reams of dodgy code to overcome, and he's done it in two or three lines it seemed to him like the natural thing to do at the time, and of course they were, and to me that was fantastic. Mm. So there's always another way to do something in Fox, whether it's what you think is the right way is what's the important thing,
and that's why you should be getting along to the user groups too.
Absolutely,
for that very reason.
Mm. And I think that you shouldn't restrict yourself to the Fox user groups. For the same reason, there are a number of ways of approaching things in other tools that may or may not be better. I think a really good example of that is regex. The regex parser, for example, in .NET is much better than the COM version that you can access in Fox. And so it may be that if you're doing a lot of regular expression parsing, then you want to try and wrap up the .NET regex parser, for example. And you probably wouldn't see that at a Fox user group necessarily. Or you might, but you've got much more chance of seeing it, someone kind of using it in passing at a .NET user group. So get along, broaden your horizons. Make sure that you understand, perhaps go to a SQL user group. Mm. People who are doing small business stuff, I'd really strongly encourage you to get along to a SBS, a small business server user group. Because these are the sorts of people who are facing the challenges that you're facing, but facing them perhaps from a different direction. And so give you a different perspective on how to achieve stuff. And that's the beauty of the community. The Fox has always been a magnificent developer community. And other communities are starting to catch up with that. But Fox has always been way up there as a community who understands the way to interact with each other and the benefit of that. So I really strongly encourage people to go and spread that message.
Okay, so Andrew, you have a strong background as a programmer, although it wasn't your original calling. And then you've been a strong developer. You've written many articles, as we mentioned previously, and you're now a developer evangelist using a whole range of tools. What are you using day-to-day?
I still use Fox day-to-day as my language of choice. I guess I call it my native language.
Yes.
The other day I was whipping up a mail merge application for my wife because she wanted to register who was coming to a party of some sort or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was something along those lines.
Right.
And whipping up a Fox app took me 10 minutes to do that.
Yep.
Whereas if I wanted to do it in another language, I would have to perhaps think about it a bit harder because I haven't been doing it for nearly as long. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like the natural thing to do. Having said that, there are other things I do using the .NET tools, especially things with around the Windows Presentation Foundation, those sorts of things where I want to have a play with, that kind of stuff. It's built very nicely into .NET, and it takes a lot more work doing that sort of thing from Fox. Emitting XAML, for example, is something that Fox should be able to do really well because it's a text-based XML thing, but consuming it is not something that Fox does well. So it's one of those interesting things that you do. And to be perfectly honest, I'm not doing a lot of day-to-day programming. It's just the occasional project that I need to do. And falling back on Fox seems like a fairly natural thing from that point of view.
Yeah, sure. And you mentioned earlier the MapPoint web services, and you've actually written a little COM object wrapper in .NET for use by, say, Fox Pro. And so that's obviously partner tools. Now, where does that actually reside?
That's up on the project distributor website that Darren Neimke has put together.
Yeah, and we've got the link to that in the show notes.
Fantastic.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, this originally started as a presentation I was going to do at the Fox User Group here in Sydney,
yes.
I guess nearly 18 months ago.
Okay.
And then went on from there to be one of the AusFox bonus sessions. But again, it was one of those things that never really quite resonated with me. It was hard to get the MapPoint web services working natively from Fox.
Right.
So I basically wrapped up the MapPoint, the proxy class that .NET writes when you pointed a WSDL file and converted, wrapped it with COM. And now you can call it from Fox, and I've added some helper functions to make it easy to do that sort of thing. And
so
it means
what was your main hurdle there with Fox and talking to this web service?
I guess there were two things. One is that it uses digest authentication, which is not something the SOAP toolkit does very well. Craig and I went through this process about that 18 months ago with Ecker, I think it was, where there were a number of things we had to do, hacks in the registry and all sorts of things to make the SOAP toolkit talk in digest authentication. It can be done, but it was a fairly tough process. The next thing was that the WSDL file for MapPoint Web Services is fairly lengthy. It's about 2,000 lines of WSDL code, and it includes some fairly complex data objects. It includes four different services that in the one WSDL file and a lot of different endpoints requiring different objects being both passed and received. And the SOAP toolkit and the Fox implementation didn't handle that. I had a look at Rick Strahl's WW SOAP classes, which handled the complex objects but didn't handle the multiple services. And while I could have gone in and looked at his code and readjusted it, it seemed that was almost abusing the wrong tool for the job.
Yes.
Whereas the right tool for the job was to use .NET to actually do the web service calls because it did it natively and then wrap it up and call it from Fox, which was, again, a fairly simple thing to do. So it was I guess I struggled against that decision for a while because I wanted to be able to do it in Fox. And then I thought, why am I punishing myself by doing this? I have a tool that does the job well. I have another tool that I need to call it from. I've got a way of those interrupting. That seems like a smart thing to do. So that's what I ended up doing.
Andrew, you use Fox every day. So what's your favorite feature?
Well, I guess I've got two favorite features. One is the command window.
Yep.
The command window is great. I love showing the command window to .NET developers because they get blown away every time when I can do these things in the immediate window, if you like. But the other one that I really love is the browse window. Being a data guy, Fox being a data tool, mm-hmm. being able to bring up a data set like that and search through it with a control F is a fantastic thing. It just means that you've got the data at your fingertips, and that's what it's all about.
Well, Andrew, thanks a lot for being on our first show on AusFox Rocks. It's been an absolute pleasure and very exciting for us. Great honour for us to have you on the show. Oh, thanks for being here.
The honour's all mine, gents, and I actually would like to say thank you to you two, especially for your work on the VFP Solution Explorer project and the excellent new feature that I understand you're going to be announcing in the next couple of weeks. So it's very exciting. I've had a sneak preview, and I can't wait to start telling people about it.
Well, thank you all for joining us on AusFox Rocks for our first show. Before we go, a few thank yous and acknowledgements. Firstly, a big thank you, of course, to Andrew McNeil of the Fox Pro Show for paving the way for the Fox Pro community in terms of podcasts. We've obviously pinched ideas right, left and centre from Andrew, and I know he'll be more than happy since it further extends the VFP community. Next, a big plug for shows like .NET Rocks, where we take a lot of our cues from. We're avid listeners of Carl and Richard, and in fact, if you've never listened to their show, then check out their latest one at the time of recording this show on Team System. It features an interview with Joel Semeniuk talking about Team System.
It was interesting, Craig, that Joel mentions Fox Pro 2.6 for Mac.
He does.
In passing, and as it was one of his first jobs in software, I found it very interesting, Richard's
comment.
Yeah. He was like, no way.
Yeah. Yeah. What did he say? It was all I go,
ouch,
look out. Yeah.
Check it out.
It's amazing how many of the prominent developers have a background in VFP. A perfect example would be Eric Rudder, of course, now a senior vice president at Microsoft. In fact, when I was lucky enough to get 30 seconds with him at TechEd last year, he mentioned that today he still uses VFP for day-to-day coding of simple database solutions.
Big thank you to Andrew Coates for giving up a lot of his time for his show. It might just sound like a 15-minute interview, but in case you don't know, there's a lot of hours of time that goes into an interview. And we thank Andrew for being patient and bearing with us while we edited and re-edited and re-edited parts of the interview.
Yeah. And finally, a big thank you to you all for listening. I hope it has been useful. See you next show.